members who are not right now active session members that were on this on the session at the time that can also be part of this with the question and answer and some things that we do at the end. But we're going to bring this presentation to you first and try to give you an idea of where we've been and where we think we're going, where we'd like to go. and then we'll do question and answer afterwards. So hopefully we can hold the questions until after Brian's made his presentation. And then what we may even want to do is bring some of the elders, both current and former, sort of up front so that they can be part of answering some of these questions when things come up. So let's open with prayer first and ask God to bless this time. Father, I thank you for bringing us together as your body, and I pray that we'll recognize that we're your body as this group of people, much more importantly than where we worship or even what style or anything else. But God, it's the body that you've brought together, these relationships that we've formed, and just pray that you'll bless us, bless the words that we speak tonight, give us open minds and help us to really discern where it is you're leading us and what your call is on this church body. And we just humbly come before you, just praying that we're seeking your face and we're doing as a church what it is you would want us to do and what we feel like you're calling us to do at this time. So just pray that you'll bless this time and be with each of us during this time. And pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. So, about a month ago, Seminole Presbyterian Church called an associate pastor. We since have hired that associate pastor and installed him, but I feel obligated to let you know I'm not him. Okay. In fact, I learned today that my new title is assistant to the associate. So that's who I am. Actually, I'm up here representing the session as well. And I want you to know that what we're bringing before you is something that we as a session, even prior to me being on the session, have really been laboring with. And it's something that I think everybody, there have been a lot of things said about it over the course of time, maybe some hints dropped. But it's something that we really feel like God is leading this church to do. And we kind of want to bring our vision before you and just kind of let you know where we think this is led. So as Danny's assistant and as the speaker for the session tonight, I want to bring up to you, we'll go ahead and go to the next slide or the first slide. The purpose of our church, or at least our mission statement that was established a few years ago, is that Seminole Presbyterian Church exists to build biblical, vital, and relevant relationships with God, one another, and the world for a lifetime and eternity. And I'll try not to read every slide to you, but that one I wanted to go ahead and read directly because that was something that they really, the session really put a lot of time into kind of developing and really wordsmithing this thing to make sure that the true mission of the church came across. We've got relationships highlighted here, and the main reason is we really want to make sure that we're focusing on developing those relationships, this body of Christ that we have and what we are. And again, I don't want to downplay the building or anything like that, but we do need to recognize that what it takes is us making a commitment to seeing each other's needs and to feeling each other's needs and becoming that body that Christ has called us to be. Like Danny preached on this morning, and like I know you've seen in a lot of our talks about vision, things that John's preached about in the past, we really need to be about the relationships that we're building, and it's what we have a vision for and we believe God's called us to do. Let's go to the first slide, to the next slide. Our vision is that we want to respond to God's call. God's called us to be here in the heart, down in central Tampa, to be a light, to shed his word, to be right here in this community where people are confronted by that power, by the power of the gospel. We want this to be something that has an effect on people's lives. And we all know what the gospel can do to our lives. And we want to make sure that we as a church are bringing that to other people. We believe that we fulfill this vision, in several different ways. And we want the church to be regional, relational, relevant, and reforming. And I'll talk about each of those things a little bit as we go on to the next slide. We want to be a regional church. We've kind of decided that God planted this church here for a reason. And we're in central Tampa. We're down here kind of in the middle of where things are because this is where God wants us to be. And we envision that this church is going to grow right here or right in this general area. I know, in fact, Jake's the one that pointed out to me, Seminole Heights Presbyterian is what this used to be called, and that's what we can be again, maybe. But we want to, you know, God's called us to be in this area, but we want to have an influence over the, you know, all of the ethnicities and all the different types of people that are around here. And I think we've found that. I've pointed out several times that this is definitely a magnet church. We have people coming from all over the place. But we really want to mold that church this way, and we really want to build our community that way through the relationships that we're creating. Let's go to the next one. A relational church, and this is one that we really want to emphasize because, you know, we really believe that's what God has called us to do, is to build those relationships, close relationships, relationships that you'll feel and will have a difference in your life, things that will really affect us where God has called us. He's called us not to be on an island, not to worship Him independently, not to try to seek Him on our own, because we'll fail. So we want to be there to help build those relationships, rejecting the idea that what makes us a successful church is if we can get bigger and bigger and more people. What makes us successful is if we're helping people stay true to God, grow in His Word, and if we're glorifying God through what we do as a body. Okay, so we want to build intimate, caring relationships through this body and focus on those kind of needs. You'll find that some of the things we've done, maybe programs we've established or things we're doing like the canoe trip, you know, the general idea is we want people to connect. We want us all connected. Let's go to the next slide. Relevant. You know, I took exception to this slide at first because I said, you know what, relevant doesn't necessarily mean that we're moving into the mainstream and making sure that we can meet people, you know, with the newest, latest thing. But at the same time, we do need to do that, and we recognize that we need to be relevant. But the Bible is always going to be relevant, and we're going to stay grounded in God's Word as a church. It's something that we want to seek to do. We want to glorify God, and we know that by doing that, we'll enjoy Him forever. So that's the relevance that we want to have. These relationships and the relevance that these relationships have in our lives, you know, I just consider it an honor that I've been able to come up here and help out, you know, with my brothers, you know, Danny and John, and seeing a need and being able to step up. Those are the kind of relationships we want to be able to have and be able to forge. And I just consider it a blessing, and I hope that we all will in different ways, and we'll see that. And that'll be what's so relevant in our lives, because we're seeing Christ in each other, and we're being that to each other. We're building God's body. Let's move on, Jackie. In a reforming church, it's something that we recognize. You know, we're building on, we're standing on the shoulders of several theologians that are reformed giants in the faith. But at the same time, we recognize that the church needs to be reforming. And it's something that, you know, they said several years ago, our identity as a church and our ministry to the world will face never-ending critique, evaluation, adjustment, etc., by your church officers, and hopefully by all of us, not just the officers. But it's something that's really happened a lot in the last several years, is that critique, that evaluation. We've seen where maybe there's a little stranglehold, maybe there's a little bit of conflict between trying to stay on this property with the school and some of the issues that we've had. We recognized way back when, you know, several years ago, we may need to reform, we may need to change. And so that's something maybe we're looking to do right now. Maybe that's where God's leading us right now. And our worship philosophy, I think we all pretty well know what our worship philosophy is. We want to be led by the Holy Spirit, and we want to be God-pleasing in all that we do. And you found that, you know, we're very liturgical, and we try to bring forth something where people know what to expect and what's going to happen. But, you know, it's not, did you enjoy worship today? It's, were you able to worship God today? Were you able to bring before Him your first fruits? And I pray that we're going to be able to bring that kind of environment for ourselves and as a church body. And so much of that's going to happen if we do it through the relationships that we have, more so than if we worry about where we're doing it. But at the same time, where we're doing it, I think, is going to have some influence on that and be able to affect us a little bit. And Brian's going to talk quite a bit about that. We as a session charged an ad hoc committee recently to look at our worship and look at our vision and kind of guide us and steer us a little bit. And one of the things that really came out of that is that we, our vision, building those relationships, is something that really needs to be central to what we do and how we do it. Another thing that came up out of that is during our worship, we want to make sure that the sacraments are able to be emphasized, something that we can really concentrate on. We want to have beauty in all that we do through our worship. And it's something maybe we feel like we're lacking. Maybe we're not able right now to do in a way that we think we could fulfill in another way. So with the, you know, with that charge, the ad hoc committee really brought that before us, and that's something Brian wants to talk about. But I just wanted to make sure that we emphasize as a church that we really want to honor God through all that we're trying to do and through all that we do, through our worship, how we do it. And I want to make sure that we as people are the ones that are reaching out and trying to do this through those relationships that we create and how we deal with each other, how we help each other along, and how we worship with God. So I'm going to turn this over to Brian, and he's going to talk about what we've been faced with over the last several years and some of the things that we've tried to come up with. Brian, are you ready?
Can you hear me okay? All right, how's that? Okay. All right, if you ever can, I'll just have Preston come help me. So, yeah, okay. Well, as Randy mentioned, this is a process that is it's been going on for several years, way back to early 2005. This is the culmination of that process since Pastor Keene came to us in early 2005, recognizing the need for revitalization here at Seminole. Pastor Keene began having a series of officer retreats with both the elders and the deacons, making sure that he built up the leadership and looking at who we are as a church, looking at our identity, putting the vision together, and then letting that be the driving factor in the decisions that we made going forward. And off and on, we kind of looked at should we stay or leave, and we were looking at all kinds of different things as that vision came forward. But we kept coming back to this fundamental question, should we stay or should we go? And there have been a few different opportunities where we thought God might be leading us one way or the other, and as we've continued to pray through, the answer is always wait, not now, and kept seeking God's face to kind of see where we're going. Well, in the meantime, providentially, a lot of pieces of the puzzle have come together, just lately adding Danny Dalton to our staff and a number of other things that are in place, which would bode well for us if we're going to do something like this. But now that we get to this fundamental question, we kept saying, well, should we stay or should we go? And after prayer and several years, we came to the conclusion we'd be better off moving. For the sake of new identity, putting new wine in new wineskins and so on. This church has been here for about 50 years, most of that time involved with the school now known as Cambridge Christian School. And we were a church school for so many years, but in 2001, ever since we split, the school is essentially on its own. We're on our own. They leased the property from us, but we're two separate institutions with two separate visions, two separate identities, missions. And it's been somewhat of a struggle trying to figure out, well, who are we as Seminole Church now that we're no longer the church that has this school? And so we kind of figured that it would be better in the long run if we were to leave and kind of leave this whole identity behind and start fresh again. A new wine and new wineskins is the thinking there. And we said, well, what if we did stay? Well, what are some things we could do? Most of you know about the lease with the school, but I don't think very many of you know the details of that lease. I'm going to cover that in detail in a few minutes, but the lease that we have with them will end in the summer of 2021. And so if you kind of think in terms of that, well, what would this campus look like many years in the future if the school were not here? And essentially what we have is 85,000 square feet of buildings on 8 acres of land, and we average about 140 people in worship on Sunday. So there's kind of a big mismatch in the size of our facilities and the amenities we have versus the size of our church. It's really set up for a school or a church with a school, but unless we're a big mega church, the facility itself is really... it's way more than what we need. So a couple things that you never know, maybe in the future you start another school or open it up to a seminary or something like that. And then those are, obviously those are things that could be done, but the vision that Randy just presented to you, there's nothing in there about a school or a seminary. It's about relationships. And so really doing things like that is kind of, they're building-driven ideas. Well, we have the buildings, let's do something with them. So if you let the vision be what drives you, it really comes down to do we really need these buildings? So another idea, well, what if we were to divide off the campus? What if we kept the church? At one point we thought about what if we kept the church and maybe this building next door and then just kind of sold off the rest of the campus to the school. And that is something we looked at, maybe that could work, but we couldn't really get our arms around a lot of the logistical challenges, and then some informal conversations with some church, with some school officials. They were very cool to that idea. That's really not going to work for them overall. So it kind of brings us back to the ultimate question here is, should we stay or go? And so we said, well, in God's providence, if he allows us, we would like to take advantage of the opportunity to leave. However, with this lease with the school, we can't just up and leave because of our obligation through 2021. So what if we had to stay? Could we implement our vision here on this campus? And that's why we have that ad hoc committee that Randy just talked about. And next slide. Okay. The ad hoc committee was composed of ruling elder Joe Donito, deacons Frank Frail and Bill Cutler, and also Laura Strickland and Danielle Blanos served on this, and they met monthly for about 6 months, taking the vision as the driver, going through that vision, looking at the vision statement, and how does it impact our worship in the facility. And a few things I do want to point out to you, which are very relevant to part of our decision process, is taking the idea of Seminole being a regional church. They discussed the reality that the traditional community church, where most live in close proximity to the church building, is a thing of the past. You know, something you might see on the Waltons or Little House on the Prairie in these small towns, but in a big metro area like Tampa, that's just typically not the case. And so how would we want our facilities to be if we were to be a magnet church, as Randy said, that's going to pull from people all through the region? And one thing we wanted to have is a presentable and comfortable sanctuary that would make people feel welcome and wanting to come back again. Taken with the idea that we want to be a relational church, having a large space for the sanctuary with a small number of people makes getting to know each other difficult. You know, some people said, well, what if we grew the membership back to 500 and packed the pews that way? I mean, certainly we don't want to try to put God in a box and tell him what he's going to do. We don't know. But the way that we're going about ministry, being relational, it's not about the all the big programs and the big circus and putting on the show for everybody to come. It takes time to build as we get to know people. And also the intimacy that we want to have. It's hard when you have, it's like a lot of these churches that have thousands and thousands of members. And that might be a model that works for them. But based on the vision that we have, it's very difficult to get to know that many people. I know even with the size of this church here, there's plenty of you I don't know very well, and I've been here for about 8 years. So, you know, it's with the small number of people we have going to that sanctuary with people seated all over the place, it's just hard to get to know people. I know there's sometimes I'll be in there and I want to make a point to see somebody who is in the back, and the second I get up to across the football field to go see them, they're out the door. And sometimes I'll sit in the back and I'll try to catch them and I'm still not successful. But the idea is we want people to be able to sit close to each other so that there's opportunities to have fellowship and get to know one another. That's what came out of this. And also, with the idea of being relevant and reforming, they were focusing on the decor and the appearance of the sanctuary. We'd like the place to be nice and go along with the kind of worship style which Randy was talking about. So those are the ideas the ad hoc committee put together, and actually came up with several different plans if we were to remodel this is the 100 building, if we were to do that. But they were looking at the sanctuary primarily. And they came up with about four different schemes, and every one of them involved ripping out all the pews that were in there and buying individual chairs that we could set up in different configurations so that we could move them and have people closer together. Also, at some point, remodeling the narthex, expanding it, making it a lot nicer. And problem is, doing all that is we're looking at probably upwards of $400,000 or so. And we were looking at ways we could do that in stages. But it was going to be very expensive. And we said, well, you know, if we're unable to get out of the lease and God forces us to stay here, then this is the direction we want to head so that we can work on implementing our vision here as God makes funds available. That's one way. But we also said, well, what happens if we can leave? About the same time that we formed the ad hoc committee, we were in discussions with the Cambridge Christian School about our lease obligations, which is very taxing on our budget. We were trying to come up with a way for them to ease our burden. And in the course of that meeting, they raised the issue again of the possibility of purchasing the property. That before they had said, you know, we're kind of in a holding pattern. We're several years away. We have an interest, but we don't know if we can do that. But in that meeting, they said, look, we're probably within 18 months of giving you a bona fide offer if you are interested. And they wanted to gauge our interest. Are we still willing? Because we had told them a few years ago that we're no longer interested in discussing. We had had some negotiations, it didn't work out. So they wanted to gauge our interest. We told them, well, we're open to whatever God wants to lead us. So we went in two directions. While the ad hoc committee was working on what to do if we stayed, a few of us were also talking with the school, trying to figure out, well, do they have the interest, the ability, can we have a meeting of the minds, and so forth. And part of the things that go with that is the schools need to own the property. You know, years ago, people's expectations may have been a little different about what they want in a school. Not today. For the amount of money they charge in tuition, people want the bells and whistles to go with it. I mean, if you're going to put that kind of money, you want quality, you want security, you want all these sorts of things. One of our big challenges that we had, well, I'll get to that in a second, but the fact that they want ownership is really important, because at the school, you know, at the end of the lease, we can just ask them to leave and they have nowhere to go. And suddenly they're out of business. So it's really important for them, if they're going to be around, they need to own property. If it's not here, they need to own somewhere else. And about, well, I guess it was 8 years ago when we made the lease, they had every intention of leaving. They were going to try to purchase the Idlewild Baptist campus up on Barris Avenue, but that fell through a few years later. And they've looked at different options over the years, but they keep coming back to this campus as their most feasible option. So, and also their accreditors is another thing. Their accreditation, as far as I understand, doesn't hinge on the fact of ownership, but they've mentioned many times that their accreditors keep mentioning it as something that's, I don't know, something they point out is a little bit concerning, that they'd like them to own it, because it's weird to have a school like this as a tenant and doesn't own property. So there is certainly a desire on their part to own. But there's also the challenges of the existing lease. The financial burden alone, 25% of our budget right now goes to the school. And what we get for it is custodial services. It pays for the electricity, the utilities, the insurance on the property, that sort of thing. It's way more costly to us. It's about $125,000-$130,000 that we paid last year. For a church of our size, we simply don't use services that cost that much. But that percentage of cost sharing is actually in the lease. It was hard-coded in the lease from the beginning, and there's nothing in there that allows us to adjust. We have to just sit down and agree to do that, and we've tried over the past few years. It's been unsuccessful. But largely, it's not just because they're being mean and unwilling. They've had struggles as well, things that happened in the past that they've tried to make up for in terms of expenses, and so they've not had a lot of room in their budget to work with us. The other thing is that, like I said before, the unsuitability of the campus, and we're talking about in the long run, is just a church. I kind of mentioned that, but another thing I didn't mention is the neighborhood demographics as well. You know, years ago, this neighborhood, a lot of the people in the church lived around here. There's still a few who that's still the case, but you know, by and large, and you know, you're doing good if you can go out there and find a number of people who speak English. I mean, the demographics have really changed, and most people that come here are not from around here. So we're kind of we're this ministry, but we're in a neighborhood that doesn't really that this is not an area that we pull from. So we've kind of looked at all that, and we said, well, okay, if we can work out something with the school, let's go that route. Now, before we get there, I want to just go over some of these lease terms. Like I said, I think most of you know about the lease, but don't really know much of what it says. The lease began in August of 2001, and it was a 10-year lease. It expires in 2 years, but the school has an option to renew it for an additional 10 years. So essentially, we're dealing with a 20-year lease that goes all the way through July of 2021. And the expense sharing in the lease, as I said before, that causes us to spend 25% of our budget, it's a 1-6-5-6 split. So whatever the insurance is, we pay 1-6 of it. Whatever the light bill is, we pay 1-6 of it. Wherever the water, and so on. Whether we use 1-6 or not, that's the split. Okay? And it's, like I said, it's about 25% of our budget. It works out to around 2% of the school's budget. I mean, it depends on which year they're in, but the school's budget at one point was around $6 million. I don't know the most recent figure, but obviously that, you know, it's a lot more of a burden to us than it is to them in terms of just weighted percentages. And this figure, it goes way back. It goes back to the days when the school and the church were one. It was when they kept separate books, but we were still one entity. And they just kind of backed into a figure that looked like it worked okay, and everybody was happy with it. But like I said, they didn't allow any mechanism to adjust that over time if things got out of whack. Because we still had probably 300, 400 people at the time we entered the lease. And obviously we don't anymore. So things have changed considerably for Seminole. The next point I wanted to mention is the rent. The school was obligated to pay us rent through the first term of the lease, and I believe they have one more payment to go. They were paying us $16,000 a month in rent, and essentially what that was is the pass-through mortgage payment. When they built the high school in the early 90s, they took out a mortgage with, at the time it was SouthTrust Bank, it's Wachovia now, but the mortgage payment was $16,000 a month. So at the time the school separated, they said, the church said, well, if we're going to let you do that, you have to pay off that mortgage. And so that's where that $16,000 a month came from. But once they make that final payment, they don't pay us any more rent through 2011. So they get a couple years that are rent-free. And then if they renew the lease for the other 10 years, which they fully intend to do, they pay us $4,000 a month beginning in that renewal period. And that's a flat $4,000. It doesn't increase over time with inflation. It's just $4,000 across the board. Now, the $4,000 a month, it's something, but for a campus of this size, it's really not anything near what we would consider to be market rent. And a little bit of the history here, not to sit here and say anything bad about people who were involved in this. At the time, the thinking was, one is this, we want to give the school the best opportunity to succeed. And secondly, the understanding was the school was going to move to the Idlewild campus, and they were going to do a phased move out. And they fully expected within 10 years they would be gone. This was kind of an insurance policy in case things got delayed. Well, if it ends up being a 20-year lease, then we sit back in hindsight and say, well, it wasn't the best business decision. It really kind of puts us in a bind in a lot of ways. So that's one of the reasons that we are talking about the financial savings we would realize if we were to get out of the lease. But another thing I want to point out about the lease is that if we want to sell the property and the Cambridge School is not able to purchase it at first, they have the right of first refusal if we get a third-party offer. Joe Smith walks in and says, I want to buy the property from you for $4 million. We'd say, okay, we'd have to give the school 30 days to match that $4 million offer. And if they do, then they get to buy it for $4 million. But there's also a credit in the lease of $1.7 million because the school felt that if they were going to have to stay here and pay off the mortgage on that building and then leave, they're saying, if we end up buying it from you, we don't want to pay twice for that building, so we want that money credited back to us. So if we sold it to the school, we would have to take that $4 million and subtract 1.7 from that, so we would end up with $2.3 million. And if we sold it to Joe Smith for $4 million because they were unable to match the offer, Joe Smith would give us $4 million, and we would have to take 1.7 and hand it over to the school. And then, again, we would net $2.3 million either way. So the bottom line is whoever buys it, there's that $1.7 million credit in that situation. Now, the thing of this is there's no buyout option for us in the lease. In other words, if the Cambridge Christian says, well, we just can't match that offer right now, the lease will still survive. So when Joe Smith buys the property, Joe Smith is now a landlord paying 1/6 of the school's cost and continuing to be their landlord through 2021. So if Joe Smith has to pay out $130 a year, how much money is he going to pay us for a property that he can't use for another 12 years? That's kind of the bind that we're in, so to speak, and we've tried to work through this in a number of ways. Again, this probably made sense based on the understanding that the school was going to leave, but the fact that they've stayed, it's really created a little bit of an issue for us, which we've tried to work through a number of times. So what we have negotiated with them is a new, first of all, we tried to see, is there a way we could sell it outright? And as of last summer, the school was very positive about it. They really felt that they had the donor support. Now was the time to buy. And we talked about ways that we could help them do that sooner rather than later. But unfortunately, everybody's aware of what happened last fall, around September, late September, early October, where the markets pretty much collapsed and people were afraid that we may not have a government the next day, and it's right before the election. It was very, people lost a lot in their 401ks, and so did all these donors who were going to give to the school. They're interested, but they lost so much wealth that they had planned to use. It's like, you know, guys, we're interested, we just can't do it right now. And so we had already come to this point where we were ready to be at a point where we were going to come to a deal, and then this happened. So we said, well, all right, you guys still have the interest. We still we think we have an opportunity here that we can work this out or we can leave. We want to see our vision really come through here. We want to see that we can do this. So we came up with the idea, well, how about you work it out where we could go ahead and leave? Because if we just left, we still owe the 1/6 of their cost. But what if we worked out something where they can continue to rent until the time that they're able to buy? And then when they're ready, then we can take care of that. But in the meantime, we could go ahead and move off the campus, and we'd do it in a way where they would absorb those expenses so that we would not be obligated to pay those costs, and that way it's not tying down our budget. So we talked with them. What we've come to is a brand new lease that would be for 12 years. It would take effect in August of this year. In the meantime, the old lease would still be in effect until that time. And it would run through the remainder of the existing lease out to July of 2021, so they're not giving up any time, but it would just be a straight 12-year lease. Since they're going to take on all of the cost for the campus, which is that additional $130,000 or so, we agreed that we would not charge rent during this time, as long as they were taking on the additional expenses. And they would still need to get our permission before they do any major renovations to the campus, and we're going to have to work out exactly what that means. And it would give the school the option to purchase the property at any time during the lease period. So the purchase option is the key here. This is how we've decided to structure this. It's largely based on what we believe is a fair value for the property, the schools, what they're willing to pay, and what they're able to raise. So there's a lot of factors here, as well as the current economy and our desire to really take hold of our vision and see this happen. So there's a lot of different things at work here. We've agreed on a initial sales price of $4 million for the first 4 years. After the fourth year, if they have not been able to exercise it, we'll get the property reappraised at whatever time after that point they want to exercise the option. And then whatever the appraisal is, that's how we'll come up with a value. And there is a discount factor because of the lease that we have with the school. It gives them a great deal of value in the property as the tenant. And so the discount in there it's already netted out in that $4 million, but that's kind of how we backed into the price to recognize that. Over time, that discount will get smaller and smaller as the lease gets closer to its maturity when it terminates. And then at that point, that would go away. The additional part of this is that the school would be entitled to a credit equal to the amount of the additional expenses that they would absorb by agreeing to renegotiate the lease with the church. So at any time, whatever they're going to take on from us, if they exercise the option, we would net that against what they pay. And the reason for that is that a lot of their donors who are willing to put up money to do this, they said, look, you know, we understand, because the school right now, the school's budget cannot absorb these additional expenses. They're super, super tight. So they said, well, you know, that was one of their problems with being able to absorb that extra, even though it's a small percentage of the budget. You know, when you don't have it, you don't have it. So they said, look, we can get some donors who will give us some gifts that will cover that. That way we can go ahead and make all the payments and you guys can leave and not pay anything. But for a lot of these donors, you know, if they're going to put out that kind of money, you know, write a check for $25,000 here, $25,000 there, they don't want to just write a check and then, you know, maybe you'll get to buy it someday. They want to know that what they're giving is going ultimately towards the purchase. And so they said, well, look, we'll put that money forward, but at the end of the 4 years, we don't want to come out of pocket more than $4 million. So they said, look, if we pay this now and let the church leave, can you, you know, credit that toward the purchase? So that's where that idea came from. And after the fourth year, we'll still give a credit, but it's only going to be half of that amount. That's a little bit of an incentive for the school to get it done in 4 years. And in my conversations with them, they have their chairman of their board, as well as their treasurer, have made it very clear that as far as they're concerned, it's a four-year window. Even though the option goes for 12 years, they feel every bit of urgency to get this done within the 4 years. So if you know, if we are ultimately able to do this, I'll certainly be praying that God will raise up the support. But now that we had asked them to keep it confidential until the point we knew we had something, but at that point now they're able to go and talk to other potential donors and raise funds. So that's kind of where we are with the option. So just to be clear on what the vote is, in just a moment we're going to talk about St. Paul's Lutheran, which I know everybody's eager to hear. But just so that we're clear on what the session is recommending, it's to enter into this lease option contract with Cambridge Christian School, which is one, would be enable the school to purchase the property at a future date whenever they exercise that option. Two, it would spare Seminole the annual financial burden that is created by the current lease at $130,000, which is very burdensome to our budget, would go away. We'd be able to do other things. And the third, and I think this is most important, that's why we began this way, but it would enable Seminole to relocate to another facility more conducive to our vision and overall future ministry. You know, as good as this is for our budget and so on, it's really about the vision. It's the vision that's been driving us. It has been all along. It's the question of if we're going to be a church that is all the things that Randy talked about today, what's the best place for us to be? And that's really what has driven this. But as we move on, I know that you know, a lot of people see, okay, you're talking about St. Paul's Lutheran, so everybody wants to know about that. The reason we're putting this here, I just want to be clear, the vote is actually on entering into this deal with Seminole. But this is here because we know that everybody wants to know where we're going to go. And so that's what we're going to get into now. So moving the vision forward, I want to talk a little bit about St. Paul's Lutheran. There's a picture of the front of the sanctuary and a close-up of the door. That's a Gothic Revival structure over there. And it was built to look like Hillsborough High School, which is directly across the street. It was built about 1950, so it's a little bit older than this facility, but it's around that era. They're a member of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. They're the oldest of that denomination. They started in 1927, so they're almost as old as we are. And they've been there for a little bit longer than we have. And currently, they have about 60 members. And they well, I think today was a vote, wasn't it? Yeah, today they were voting on calling a new pastor, which I'm assuming that went through. Okay. They had a pastor who was there a few weeks, and then he discovered he had pancreatic cancer, and he was dead within 6 weeks or so, or it wasn't very long. 3 months, yeah. Yeah. So it was pretty devastating to them, and they began to search, and now God sent them a new pastor who will be starting pretty soon, we hope. Now, why St. Paul's? First of all, location, location, location. That is really key here. The building size and the sanctuary setup as well, but really want to stress the location. St. Paul's is located on Central Avenue. It's just down the road. It's just a few miles up the road, up Hillsborough Avenue, which is right next to the interstate. It's maybe a third of a mile south if you turn off Hillsborough Avenue, maybe a third of a mile down Central Avenue on the left if you're headed south. This is about as central as you can get in the Tampa metro area. And on this map, the star in the middle there is where the church is located, right off Hillsborough Avenue and 275. And you can see all the various areas around here, the Town and Country West Chase. You can shoot straight down Hillsborough Avenue. You know, if you're in this Citrus Park, maybe northwest Hillsborough area, Carrollwood, it's still fairly accessible from the interstate. Same with the USF area, Temple Terrace, or south of there. If you're in South Tampa and you want to come, if you're in the downtown or Ybor area, there's a lot of urban revitalization going on in those areas with a lot of residential people. And then there was an article the other day, actually, that they expect this area south of Hillsborough Avenue down to 275 to be a big focus of growth over the next 20 years. Yeah, and if that happens, you know, we're right in the middle of that. So clearly location as far in geographical terms as far as pulling from people around the area. But also the Seminole Heights neighborhood. You know, we mentioned before that this neighborhood demographic has really shifted over time. It's really very different than what our composition is. Well, Seminole Heights is an area that, as far as demographics, it's far more likely to be a neighborhood where we would pull people who live around and want to come. There's some pictures on there if you're not too familiar with the area. It's it was around the 1920s or so is when most of the homes were built. They're beautiful, mostly arts and craft bungalow style or some Mediterranean. But it's an area that probably back in the 90s began revitalization, and today you can see the benefits of that. Right down the road at Hillsborough Central is Starbucks, which I believe is the busiest one in all of Florida. And when I heard they were going to be closing stores, you know, that's John's favorite one. Pastor King goes there, and they made sure, no, that's one of the most profitable. It's that one's hopping, so never fear. But it's an area that's being settled by a lot of young families, and so it's the type of neighborhood that we're likely to pull people in from and have them actually stay and want to be a part of what we're doing. Go ahead and, well, here's a few more pictures. There's a Starbucks, actually, but there's on the far left there's a Methodist church up the road. It's an old historic church. And actually, this area, there are a couple different historic districts in there. The church is part of the local historic district, but just outside of that, there's a national historic district as well. So the idea of preservation and making the area look nice, it's a big focus down there. There's Hillsborough High School. It's directly across the street from the church. And so, you know, we have that opportunity, too, being right there to be able to possibly do ministry in that sense. Okay, the building and the sanctuary, you know. So why St. Paul's? Well, it's a sanctuary that is driving this more than anything. And I'll wait for these guys to leave. I know this is a little distracting, so that's all right. Okay. All right. Well, we're just in time because now's when we're getting all the pictures everybody wants to see. So anyhow, I'll go ahead and go to the next slide. Here's a picture of the sanctuary. That picture is a little grangy for some reason. I don't know why, so it doesn't actually look kind of skewed in that way. But the first one, I think that's the same picture from the other page, a good shot of the front of the sanctuary. And there's a picture of it from the side. And off to the right is another picture from the side a little farther down. That area that sticks out a little bit is where the choir room is. And go to the next slide. Just a little bit about the sanctuary. The seating is for approximately 200 people out in the actual sanctuary part, or seating for the choir up in the chancel. It does have a split chancel similar to ours, but they're actually the lectern and the pulpit are fixed in there. There's a pipe organ. It's a very old organ. They have the adjoining choir room. There's some restrooms in that main building. There's also a sacristy, which would be nice for the deacons when we're preparing communion. There's a cry room in the narthex area. It's small, but it's more than what we have here, actually, in the way of a cry room. It's something that we thought about putting in with the ad hoc committee's plans if we ended up staying here. And they have a bell tower there as well. Now, before I say any more, I meant to say this from the very beginning, but we want to make something clear here. When we're not trying to pick up everything we have here and move it down the road so that everything's the same. So some things are going to be smaller, some things are going to be different. I want you to understand that up front. If you're trying to do a checklist and an apples and apples comparison, okay, this one has this one, yeah, you're not going to be able to do that. We're looking at this because we've looked at our space trying to figure how much do we really need and what would be better for us right at this time in our at this point in the life of Seminole. So keep that in mind as we go through this. Here's some pictures of the sanctuary. The one on the left is looking towards the narthex. They have a baptismal font that's there, although that is movable, so if we have a service, we don't have to leave that there. But you can see the vaulted ceilings, and really the pictures don't do it justice. If you're sitting in there, it's a pretty beautiful sanctuary, for a Protestant sanctuary. I think it's pretty nice. It's kind of like, I'm sorry, I go downtown to the Bach birthday bash, and when I'm listening to organ music and Sacred Heart Catholic Church, the picture on the right is facing the chancel, and you can see the pipe organ. There's some stained glass above. The windows are stained glass as well, which is a nice feature, which makes it look more ornate. You can see the pulpit and the lectern up there. They also have communion rails around their altar. They go forward for communion. And how we would do that would be up to the session, how they want to do that. Little details like that remain to be seen. We're not ready to discuss any of that tonight. There again is more of a close-up of the front of the church, and there's another close-up of the chancel. You can see the communion rails a little bit better in front of the altar. There to the left is more of a close-up of the pipe organ with the stained glass. And to the right, that's the stained glass that you'd see on the windows with the wood trim. And it's not images or anything like that, but it's still some color, and it's something nice, a nice touch to the sanctuary. A few more pictures, a close-up of the altar, of the pulpit, and the lectern, so you can kind of see that. Just keep going. Okay, to the left, that's the cry room. That what you see up above, that's the window where you can actually look out into the sanctuary. But just above it, you can't really see it too well. There's a television. It's like a closed circuit, so you can watch what's going on that. And off to the right, there's a room where they store their altar cloths and so on that might be available. The Ed Building is directly behind the sanctuary. And there's a picture of it when you're coming out of the sanctuary. Actually, it's off to the side. That's directly behind the sanctuary. But you can see there's a little bit of a courtyard over to the left as you walk. There's an area around there. And there's also a courtyard where these people are standing. There's several benches. It's kind of like a nice little area where you can sit out under the trees and between the buildings. Go ahead. And this is what the schematic of it looks like. On the inside, the entrance down at the very bottom is where you would enter if you were coming out of the sanctuary. That's the main door going in. And those two offices down there in the corner, as soon as you walk in, and I believe even the one just above, the two down here, those would be for St. Paul's and what they have going on. But the rest of the space, and also the one in the very top corner, that office on the far right, that would not be available to us. But the rest of the rooms would be. And what we'd be looking at doing in these rooms, especially that big long one up at the very top of the diagram, is being able to have a type of retractable wall that can be set up to divide the rooms. And we're looking at something that would be as minimal as far as sound as we can go, as close to being soundproof as possible, so that we can have children classrooms in there. And we've gone through with each of the rooms, and we've been able to determine we have sufficient space for the number of children's classes, the nursery space, and adult Sunday school as well. But assuming that we're able to move forward with this, there would be some slight renovations that we would be making in order to do this over the summer months. And we'd be working with St. Paul's and trying to get that done. So this, we would be looking at having the first service over there the second Sunday of September, I believe. That's the target date for now. I don't know if it's written in stone yet, but that's kind of what we're looking at over the summer months. This picture here, you can see that's the nursery. And we'd have the ability to divide the room, one for infants and one for toddlers. And this room was recently redone. They did, it's not wood, is it? It's something else. Yeah, it's like pergo floors and synthetic. It's something like this. It does look really nice. They've taken time. They're starting to go through room by room and remodels. Again, it's an old building, but they're trying to make it more up to date. Okay, next slide. Okay, and then just across from here, there's it's like a conference room, but there's a table area set up. There's also a few sofas and chairs and so on. Should make a nice meeting space or a classroom for adults if we wanted to do that. This is the room that they used. It's the kitchen is actually back here, and this would be the room that they use that as their fellowship hall. And that's why I wanted to give you the warning beforehand that we're not doing an apples and apples comparison of just picking up and moving. But obviously, in a room like that, you couldn't have a meeting like this. This is actually, it's for what they use, it's fairly, it's pretty good for what they use. They pack a lot of people in there, more than I'd want to put, but they do it. And they've also used the room across the way that we were talking about dividing. They use that room, too, for their space. I know the question's going to come up, well, what about when we have big events and that sort of thing? Well, again, we're keeping with our vision as we look at things that come up that we want to do, if they're worth doing, and having, it doesn't necessarily mean they have to be at the building. And that's one of the things that, you know, as we're talking about relocating, it's going to mean change. I mean, this is a pretty big change. So it's going to mean change in a lot of the things that we do, the things that we think through. You know, I remember when I first started coming here, one year they had when the ladies had that Christmas brunch, they had it over at one of the restaurants at Rocky Point. And they rented out a room and had something like that. And so if we wanted to do things, there are all kinds of ways we can still have events. They just don't necessarily have to be in the building. You know, a lot of times we have things because we have the space, but if you really want to do them, we're not stuck using the building. There are all kinds of ways we can continue to have ministry events. I just wanted to give you some idea. This is that big room across the way that we would be able to use, a long, narrow room. And they use this during elections. They use it as a polling center. They rent it to the supervisor of elections. So they would need to be able to have the room open. But we would be able to have our retractable wall, so we're able to divide up the space. And we've talked to them about certain kinds of upgrades that we would like to do or would be willing to do at some point in the future. And they're excited about it. I mean, they're trying to do what they can. But they're certainly more than willing to work with us as much as possible. Here's a little bit of the. This is the grounds. This was taken back in right after one of those heavy frosts that came through, so the grass looks like it's dead. I thought we took this picture out of the slideshow, but evidently we didn't. But anyhow. There is this courtyard area, and there's room in there for kids, for smaller kids to run around and play there while we were at the church on a Sunday. And we're talking about putting up a kind of a basic playground set on the opposite side of this building. There's room there, and they're very open to that, so the kids will have a playground area that we can fence in. Parking is going to be one issue. There is room to park. However, all the parking is not necessarily on the grounds. Over there in Seminole Heights, they have parking on the streets and Central Avenue on either side. And on the weekends, you're allowed to park there. So there's that. There's also Hillsborough High across the street that they allow people to park on their lots. So if there's plenty of room to park right there. It's one of those things we're going to have to work with them. We need to be sensitive to their needs, and they'll be sensitive to our needs and so on. But we want to make sure that we work with them so that we, neither side's hogging all the spaces, especially for the elderly and the handicapped and so on. We want to make sure that we're sensitive to that. But there is plenty of parking when we look at everything that is there. Okay, another question is, what are we doing with our office space? Until maybe the last week or so, 2 weeks, we weren't really sure. They have a manse on the site. But the thing is the reason we didn't know is because in their denomination they offer that manse to the new pastor. We weren't really sure if the new pastor was going to want to use it or not. So what What ended up happening is the new pastor came in, the pastor's wife came, and they said, you know what, we're not going to live there, we're going to go somewhere else. So the manse is available to us, and the church is more than happy to lease that to us. And there's room in there for 4 offices. We can put in a reception area, there's a room for a conference area for the officers to meet. There's a kitchen area in there, as well as storage space. There's a garage where things could be stored. So the fact that it's on church property is nice, and it's also very close to the sanctuary. So a lot of things that we can't necessarily store in the sanctuary building, on Sundays we can just pull it out of the manse and have it available. That way we don't have to drive across town for this sort of thing. But it is a pretty nice room, the room space that's in there. Some additional details. As far as we would have a lease agreement with St. Paul's. It wouldn't just be a gentleman handshake. We would have something in writing. And we met with them. What they're willing to do for now at this point is enter into a lease that would be for 2 years. And at the end of the first year, we would do an annual review. And at that point, if everybody's happy with it, they would allow us to renew at the end of the second year for a third year or a fourth year and so on. Depending on, in other words, if they do come back and say, you know what, we don't like this, this isn't working, we still have a year. They can't just say, okay, next week you have to leave. Now, having said that, I just want to say, based on my conversations and meeting with these people, I really fully expect this is going to work out fine. Pastor Keene has met with them many times. And he's actually done this before in 2 different churches. So we're talking about a pastor who's experienced. This isn't just somebody's wild idea of, oh, we'll just figure it out as we go. I mean, Pastor Keene has done this. So he knows some of the pitfalls and some of the things that we want to be doing. But like I said, I fully expect that it's going to work out just fine. But that is what we're looking at it right now. The Ed building, like I said, we'd have to do some revisions to it. Some modifications to accommodate us, but they were more than willing to allow us to do that. We would be doing that over the summer, so that by the fall, we're looking at, again, the first Sunday after Labor Day, which would be the second Sunday of September. It's kind of the first date. That is tentative again, so please don't take that as written in stone, but that's what we think the target will be. And we will be allowed to display a sign for our church on the property. What we'll probably do is have it, it's not going to be right on top of their sign, but we'll probably have it out maybe a little bit closer toward the manse area. But it'll be out front at all times, so anybody driving down the road will know that Seminole meets there. And anybody looking for us can find it. What's the last one? Okay. Before we turn it over to questions, there's a few things a couple things I just wanted to mention here before I turn it to Randy. I'd like to share for just a moment from the book of Joshua. This is something that I taught this a few years ago in Sunday school, and it's a passage that I've really treasured from this book. And this is after the children of Israel had crossed over the Jordan. They're already in Canaan. They're in the Promised Land. They're getting ready to attack Jericho. And Joshua is preparing for that. The word tells us here, when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? And he said, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. The reason I wanted to read that tonight is just a passage that is, especially as we're looking at something like this. And Joshua's asking a perfectly legitimate question. You know, whose side are you on? You on ours or on theirs? I mean, Joshua knew that God was going to be with them, but this captain of the Lord's army, this is none other than the Son of God who's standing before him. He says, no. He says, I'm the captain of the army. You need to fall on your feet and worship. And giving Joshua the proper perspective, that most important thing is that we're in God's will, that we keep God focused. He is our focus in this whole thing. And that's why one thing I wanted to bring up in all this stuff, because this is a big change. It's a big decision. It's a huge moment for our church. And I'll just tell you again, like I said before, this is the culmination of a lot of things over the past few years leading up to this. And about 6 years ago, this congregation gave me the honor and privilege of being able, at the ripe old age of 27, to be serving on the pulpit search committee to find our pastor, who ultimately was Pastor Keen. And I remember about halfway into that thing, there were times where I was like, you know, we're hitting a dead end. It's drying up. We're not going to, you know, God, what are you doing here? And then suddenly, unsolicited, we receive a resume with three tapes from somebody named Reverend John K. Keen from Gadsden, Alabama. Okay, I put in the tape and I listened to the first sermon, and right then I said, that's our man. That's him. And certainly, I mean, of course, God had to confirm that, but it was just that feeling that God had brought us our man. And praying through that and seeing it come to fruition as John became our senior pastor, and looking at his leadership and how he's pulled the officers together and really focused on vision, and that's what's going to drive a church. That's how we're going to lead and follow God's will. It's just being able to get to this point is, for me, it's very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but it's very satisfying to be at a point where I can actually, you know, eat the fruit from my own tree instead of doing some work moving on somewhere else. To really be a part of that has been a great honor and privilege. And on that note, I'm going to turn this over to Randy.
I'm really not sure what to anticipate from a question standpoint, but I'm sure Brian needs to keep the microphone close by, because several will probably involve things that he wants to talk about. But before we get to questions, let me see if I can clarify a few. The vote that we're talking about taking in a couple weeks will be to enter into the lease agreement with the school. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with going to St. Paul's. Now, we present St. Paul's to you just as it's something that, you know, my advice to Danny, even though he'd probably heard it a million times when he was considering coming here, is, you know, you walk out in faith, you step out in faith, you go where you think God is leading you, and you trust him to close doors or open doors as he sees fit to make things obvious to us. This looks like a big open door to us. The way, what basically led to this were relationships. John's relationships with some of the people at St. Paul's, and I don't think it was just John, I think a couple other people as well. And it just basically really showed that this is potentially a very open door that God has placed in front of us to maybe show us, hey, this is a direction you can go if you're ready to walk out in faith and where you want to go. Let me clarify that the vote is going to be on entering into the lease agreement with the school. Now, the details of that lease agreement will not have been completed. We do have the gist of it, or what that lease would be based upon, and I don't know if we really need to get into that. I'm sure several people are going to want to ask that question, and maybe we'll have some way to cover that without having to answer it 27 different ways. But that's one of the main things that I wanted to bring up. And you know, you've elected a session as to be your representatives, and we make several or most of the decisions on where the church will go or what our function is going to be. When it comes to something like purchase of property or sale of property or something like that, we're going to put that before congregational vote. So that's why we wanted to make sure everybody's well informed, people understand what's going on, where we've been, where we're going. Hopefully we don't have to dwell too much on where we've been. That's one of the things that we would hope to head off a little bit. We want to be looking forward, looking to where this church is trying to go. Another question that I'd like to maybe head off is you as a session, were you unified? Yes. We voted unanimously to move forward with this proposal to offer the school this lease option purchase. Another thing is, you know, is John part of this, or is it John over here in the session over here, or vice versa? We, the session, are the session. Now, Danny as well. You know, the teaching elders, the ruling elders, we, the session, are moving forward with what we believe God has given us, this vision. And John's just chomping at the bit and so wishing he could be here. So I've got an email from him that he wrote to the officers. I'm not going to share the whole thing with you because it'd be kind of long. And I think it was personally directed to the officers. But I'd like to read just a little piece of it so you get an idea of where he's coming from. And I think now's the appropriate time before we get into questions. It says, on a personal note, I confess that I have never felt more comfortable or at home as pastor of SPC than I do right now. And oddly enough, my feelings and thoughts are inextricably bound to the possibility of moving. In 1990, I was assessed and approved as a church planner for the PCA with the highest rating, that is a clearance to go to a large urban area and engage in a parachute project without a care group, without a core group, and with the powers of the of an evangelist, subject to the approval of the presbytery I would be laboring in. Subsequently, I was sent to New Orleans, where I planted a new church and served as pastor for a period of 5 years. The reason I mention all this is because I have done it, to a large degree, what we are about to do if the congregation approves our plan. I feel like I've spent almost 5 years crawling, and now I'm prepared to stand up and run. I don't wear my church planting abilities and credentials on my sleeve, but like every one of you, God has given us talents, gifts, and past experiences for a reason. And I cannot help but think that we all have been assembled by the Lord's sovereign decree for this moment in the history of Seminole Church. The thought of breaking free from CCS and becoming a brand new congregation is extremely stimulating to me. So that's John's thoughts. He's not ever here, so I wanted to make sure you kind of heard what he's thinking and the way he's going. And I wanted to make sure you understand that we as a session have voted unanimously to present this before you as a congregation. So with that, I'll take questions. I'm not going to answer them. I may answer some of them. And we have elders that are, you know, they're still your elders. They're just not necessarily currently serving on the session that may be able to answer some of your questions better than I. But, you know, should we bring some of the other session members up? Okay. Brian and I are going to try to tackle most of these first. I think I saw Brian's hand up first.
How are you going to work the worship spaces out with St. Paul?
You want to cover that? Okay.
All right. As far as the way it's going to work is one of us will be worshiping while the other is having Sunday school, essentially. So we're going to be swapping off times. Currently, they worship at 11 a.m. So we're thinking that most likely we will be changing the order of ours, having our service followed by the Sunday school hour, which we used to do in this church when O'Dowd was here a long time ago. But the exact time of the session wasn't going to have to work that out.
Okay, Marshall.